Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. So glad you can join me each and every Saturday. 10 years, that's a lot of shows. Bringing the world of art and sports and surgery together. So much fun. I can't say I'm exhausted today because I had this week off. But I knew I'd be setting up the show because my guest's coming up at 8:15. You don't want to miss it. Is someone who knows a lot about comedy, which we could use right now. What makes life funny? Not a lot to laugh at right now, but nobody knows better what it is that we're searching for, the therapeutic nature of laughing, better than George Schlatter. He created the number one show on television, 1968, Rowan and Martin's Laughing. And the genius behind that show was that the host was not just one person. It was two. It was a straight man, and it was the funny man, Dan Rowan and Dick Martin. And I can't wait to ask George Schlatter the tricks behind that concept, that you have a tandem. The straight man and the funny man, the play-by-play guy and the analyst. Dr. Curlin, the great diagnostician, and Dr. Job, the great surgeon. When you have that combination occur, who was Dan Rowan? Who was Dick Martin? Dick Martin was the funny one. Dan Rowan was the straight man. Let's listen to the two of them. In this skit, Dick Martin pretends to be a doctor. Dan Rowan's just saying, you're not used to being on television in front of people in an audience, pretending to be the straight man, setting it up for his first appearance on TV, pretending to be this doctor who'd never been on TV before. The straight man you'll hear setting it up, Dan Rowan, and wait till Dick Martin takes over. Let's go to number one.
I wanted to explain to you what's going to take place.
Fine.
Since you see the show, you know what we do. As
yes.
They say, it's
yes.
Talk, informal. Conduct yourself as if you're in your kitchen. We drop by for coffee.
Oh, fine.
A little chat in that fashion.
It'd be
right?
My pleasure.
There are a couple of things I want you to think about, though. Uh-huh. We have the three cameras set up on this show.
Nice. Yes.
We have one over here,
yes.
One right in the center,
uh-huh.
Another camera over on that side.
Oh,
now,
I see.
All three of those cameras are immobile. So
they're where?
They're fixed.
They're fixed?
They're stationary cameras.
Oh.
They don't travel. So
you said fixed, I was wondering.
And now Dick Martin takes over as the comedian. Dan Rowan has set him up by using the word fixed, talking about those cameras. Number two.
Well, they're fixed in place. So
I had my cat fixed. We can go Thursday.
It's not the same.
Old Terrible Tom, we used to call him.
Yeah. So
he bust right out of the bushes after him.
Yeah.
He'd nail anything that moved.
We finally went in and finished.
Yes, Doc, I want you to...
He just sits in the bread box and stares at me.
Doc, I really would like to get right in.
We call him Sam Spade.
Well, all right. I really don't need to hear any more about your cat. Now,
there's a depth to the comedy. There's a depth to sports. There's a depth to surgery when you have that contrast. I give full credit to Leonardo da Vinci, who in order to paint light in the painting, he recognized you got to paint shadow. If you paint the shadow, then you recognize the three-dimensional nature of life. Even though it's a painting, it's just two dimensions. The painting takes on a third dimension of depth when you have a shadow and you appreciate the light. But no one really appreciates the straight man. They focus always on the one making the most noise. the comedian. But you know who appreciates that is the stem cell, the greatest comedian of the 20th century, Groucho Marx. He and his brothers, the Marx brothers, revolutionized the world of comedy. But it was key to Groucho that his brother Chico would set him up as the straight man, and Groucho was the comedian. Well, on the Dick Cavett show, Groucho Marx was the guest. Who did Dick Cavett now have on as another guest? But Dan Rowan. Groucho Marx could not help himself but to point out to Dan Rowan, I watch you on Laughing. You're amazing. You're the best straight man I've ever seen. And I appreciate, as a comedian, the work that the straight man does. It made Dan Rowan uncomfortable, and you can hear it in his voice. But it's true. He's more important than the comedian. Let's listen to number three.
One night I met you in Chasen's.
Yes, sir.
We were both having dinner, not at the same table. You were sitting with a group, five or six other people, and I walked up to you, not knowing you, and I said, I think you're one of the greatest straight men I've ever seen. And you took umbrage at this. I was trying to compliment you, and you thought I was trying to insult you. I still think you're one of the greatest straight men I've ever seen.
And I'm still taking umbrage. No, it's true. I appreciate
it. He doesn't know how to take a compliment, Dan Rowan, but he knows exactly what Groucho Marx is trying to tell him. Let's listen to number four.
I want to tell you something. There has never been a good comedian that didn't have a good straight man.
Oh,
you go down through the ages of all the great comedians. They always had a great straight man. In my case, it happened to be Chico, because he was my brother.
Yeah.
But he did what a normal guy, if it hadn't been my brother, would have been doing for me.
But and, Chico also, I'm sorry.
And I thought he was offended that night. Yeah.
No.
Now let's hear the response that Dan Rowan has, because he's going to tell Groucho, you were the comedian, Groucho, so you know what it was like to become the star. And thank you for recognizing that it's because of Chico you got to be that funny. This is what's great. Dan Rowan explaining, nobody ever realizes the work that's behind the scenes by the straight man. Number five.
And I appreciate it very much, because not very many people, when you're working as a team, ever say very much to the straight half of the team.
The straighter half, let's
say. Well, I don't think the straight man means anything, but it's very important.
And it's, well, you know, for a long time you get off stage and people will go rushing right past you and pat Dick on the back and say, you are the funniest son of a gun I ever saw, and I'm standing there ordering a drink, you know.
And number six.
And so the night that Groucho did that to me at Chasen's, number one, it's a very unusual thing for anybody to say. Number two, here is the guy who is the classic comedian to all people in comedy, talking to me personally, which is a little discomforting in first place.
Yeah.
And in the third place, I don't, I'm really fairly uncomfortable when people say things like that to me. I don't know what to say.
Just say thank you and recognize that the greatest comedian of the 20th century thinks you're amazing. It was a beautiful moment. Well, you know, I love the world of art, I love the world of sports, and I love the world of surgery. Where do we see the straight man making the analyst look good? Where's the play-by-play guy, the straight man, teeing it up to give the broadcast depth, something that George Schlatter appreciated? Where do we see it in sports? For me, no one ever did it better than Pat Summerall as the straight man. Let's listen to number 10.
There's a lot of play-by-play guys, and when you hear them talk this, well, I got to lead the analyst. I'll help him. I'll lead him. Well, you don't help him by leading him. You help him by letting him look at the whole field and see where he's going to go, and then at the end, you tag it.
He makes a little basketball twist there and pivot, and boom, the ball's there right again between the 8 and the 9. Oh, is he happy?
What a throw from Anderson.
That was his natural way. And I don't know that that's really understood today. I don't know that that's ever been understood.
He was willing to be the straight man to John Madden's show. And that says a lot about a guy and how secure he was.
That was Pat Summerall. Well, how did Pat Summerall get into this business? He was a player. He was a kicker for the New York Giants. This is in the infancy of television and football in the late 50s. The good-looking quarterback for the New York Giants was Charlie Connerly. CBS says, you know what? How great would it be to have a football player be the person describing the football? Be great to have that good-looking quarterback from the Giants. So CBS called, looking for George Connerly. Well, he was gone. His roommate answered the phone to take a message. The roommate was Pat Summerall. And as Pat Summerall took the message, the guy at CBS says, you know what? You have a great voice. Maybe you should come down and audition. Pat Summerall did not have a clue what he was going to do after football. But fate stepped in. Listen to Jim Nantz telling the story, number one.
Pat kind of slipped into the business. It was truly fate. He was sharing an apartment with some of his Giants teammates, and they were looking for Charlie Connerly. It was a call from WCBS in New York.
Ellen.
And when Pat answered with that beautiful voice of his, he was asked, by the way, Ellen, why don't you come on down and audition?
This is the attraction of pro football.
Summerall got the job.
Now, let's check the scores from yesterday. First of all, the Yankees had a good Sunday and beat the Senators at D.C. Stadium in Washington. Tommy Trash drove in four runs, and Ruben Amaro hit his first home run of this year.
So there you see the infancy of Pat Summerall, just reading the news. But people realized, and he realized, this is an art form. This is something where my creative juices can come out. Let's listen to number two.
In 1970, Pat was paired with Tom Brookshire on NFL Films This Week in Pro Football.
Hey, Tom, I got a riddle for you.
Okay.
What is green, can't score, and is not welcome at home?
You really know how to hurt a guy, don't you, Pat?
You know, they were kindred spirits. I think they saw that right off.
As Will Rogers once said, Tom, I never met a man I didn't like, but obviously he never met a coach on game day.
Let's go to number three.
In 1974, Pat switched from analyst to play-by-play and suggested that Brookshire join him on CBS's number one broadcast team.
The Jets have won the toss and elected not to play.
They were just natural people, friends at the bar, talking, BSing.
Of course, the man that is synonymous with Jets is Joe Namath.
Wonder about Joe. We thought maybe he would stay up all night to make sure he wouldn't have to play in this game, but
he probably did.
The problem with Tom Brookshire was they were two peas in a pod. They were too much alike. It wasn't a straight man and a comedian. It was two comedians. And ultimately, that's what caused it to fail. But listen to Barbara Brookshire, Tom Brookshire's wife, talk about these two guys who loved each other, who were great, but could only take it so far, how they would mix it up. Number five.
They would take turns. One would write down a phrase or something, put it in an envelope, seal it, and give it to the other one. The other one was not allowed to open it until they sat down to do the game and they were on. Then they could open it and look at it, and somewhere in the broadcast they had to fit it in.
Any kid that collects rattlesnakes can't be all bad, right?
Two, one, take remote.
Can get the equipment working if my assistant, Mr. Brookshire, can do that.
Pat and Brookie's Theater of the Absurd included their pregame show appearances.
They changed the world of football. Let's go to number seven.
They call us the Sunshine Boys, and, you know, we rode pretty high when we were together.
We were in New York City one night, and we ended up taking a ride in one of the Surreys.
So we got to the Plaza Hotel, and the handsome cab driver was an Irishman. They said, gee, you fellas are having an awfully good time. I wish I could go with you. And I said, well, come on. He said, well, what am I going to do with my horse? I said, bring him.
And we had him in almost into the elevator, but we couldn't get his head down to get him in the elevator.
Two peas in a pod, but it would be better if there was a contrast to give the broadcast depth. So they got rid of Tom Brookshire. Who are they going to pair John Madden, who was going to be a star, with? Was it going to be Pat Summerall or Vin Scully? Let's listen to number 8.
Was that Tom wasn't great, but John was better, and the potential was off the charts. So it became a question, okay, who do we put him with? And the toss-up was, Pat Summerall, should he continue, or Vin Scully?
They had me work with Vin Scully the first half of the year.
Hi, everybody, I'm Vin Scully, along with John Madden.
And then switch and work with Pat.
Good afternoon, I'm Pat Summerall with John Madden.
And number 9?
They were two different people who had totally different interests, but they came together to make maybe the greatest broadcasting team ever to be on sports television.
Boom, we cross him. The left goes to the right goes to the left. This guy crosses here, he crosses here. They have no idea where we are, who we are, where we're coming from, or who we're throwing to.
Very interesting.
The thing that was special was Pat. I mean, if I'd go like, boom, over a cliff, I mean, Pat would catch me and bring me back up, and we'd be, you know, first and 10.
Mm. Can you imagine after all that, that's all he says is very interesting. But that's the job of the straight man. Let the comedic guy do his thing. It gives the show depth. It gives the teaching of surgery depth to have Dr. Curlin and Dr. Job teach me. It makes the jokes funnier. It makes the sports better. And we'll learn more about the secret sauce from the man who knows it best, the great George Schlatter, coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
Carly's got a gift card for you.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
K-L-A-P-P-A-H. Clapper.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN. 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I am so happy and excited to talk to my next guest, the great George Schlatter. George, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
Glad to be here. You see, comics don't get up at this hour. Doctors do. I mean,
the world's a different place at this hour, that's for sure.
Comedians usually throw up until noon, but you guys get up in the middle of the night. This is crazy. Damn.
So tell me, George, I love the world of art. I love the world of sports, and I love the world of surgery. And I believe those worlds that I love are the same on some and many levels. You think I'm a little off base analyzing the straight man and the comedian, the depth that you get when you have that contrast. Take us back to your feelings about comedy and what happens when you have a straight man, and why is he so important in comedy?
Well, people don't understand the straight man. For instance, Groucho Marx was more than half the act. I mean, Chico didn't do anything, and Harpo never said anything. So Groucho was the secret to that act. But he was much more than a straight man. He was, and he was mean. I loved Groucho. He was mean.
That was
part of being a straight man. You had to be, you mean to tell me, now wait a minute. You know, you had to interrupt him and you had to be rough. Dan was probably funnier than Dick. Dan was much more than half of the act.
And Dick, how did you meet those guys?
Dan gave him the wall to bounce off of. But when we gave Dan a joke, he killed. He said,
really?
We did News of the Future 20 years from now. Dateline Vatican. With marriage in the church now, the accepted thing, the Archbishop and his lovely bride, former sister Mary Catherine, both announced, this time it's for keeps, if only for the sake of the children. Dan Rowan took that thing and killed, but that required a really strong, definite, dogmatic, opinionated performer. So Dan was great. He was tough, though. You mean to tell me, you know, he was awesome.
You know, I read about Dan Rowan's life as much as I could, knowing I'd have you on. And what a tragic life this man comes from. To some extent, the Greeks were right when they said tragedy and comedy. How much do you feel tragedy and comedy are interrelated?
Well, you only have to, you really want to know the answer to that?
Yeah, I do.
What you have to do is watch Donald Trump's acceptance speech. I mean, you want tragedy and comedy? I mean, that man, you know what my dream is?
Tell me.
I am going to take his acceptance speech of the nomination, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to edit it and dub it like a comedy. And I'm going to add rim shots, and I'm going to add music, and I'm going to add, so when he says, anything he says, we're going to put a laugh track underneath it. It would be hysterical, because when he said, you know, I've made more jobs, we'll do rum, bam, rim shot. And then he says, I'm all for America. We would do ba 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 dee ba 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 ba. And so you would absolutely put it for what it is, which is he's a hand puppet. He's a comic. And
wow.
He's just think about Donald Trump as a comedian, not as a politician. And you'll feel much better about the country.
Someone that you cross paths with, which really is very important to today, and you've crossed paths with a lot of people in your long and beautiful life, was Muhammad Ali. Give us some insight about what it was about the champ that inspired you so much.
Well, he was, first of all, he was funny. And he knew funny, but I mean, he had such secrets, and he was such so deep. He was a major national treasure, and they took away four of the best years he had because of his opposition to the war.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know he was right, and everybody should have opposed the war. But mm-hmm. What a sweet, gentle giant he was, you know. And one of his fights, he came over to the house to watch the fight, and we had some people over, and we went in the bedroom, but he had to go in the room and pray for an hour before he could watch the fight.
Wow.
And but he was what a sweet, gentle, but also very funny man.
What is it about Frank Sinatra that appealed to you so much that we perhaps don't appreciate?
What is this, an hour show? I mean, there were many different Frank Sinatras. I had such fun with that man. My first day at MCA, I was like 17 years old, and I got a job in the mailroom, and I was given the mail to take to the boss of MCA down the hall. And when I went down there, they said, Sinatra's in the building, and all of the agents came in and followed Frank Sinatra down the hall. And I had this piece of paper that I was supposed to give the boss, right? And when he arrived, he was going to sign his new contract. And the thing with Sinatra was that they represented Sinatra, but he never paid him commission. Because to represent Sinatra meant they could sell all of their other acts. So I'm standing there, and Sinatra comes walking in. And, I mean, it was terrifying. You didn't realize. First of all, you thought he was much bigger. He was not a big man. He was a small man. And I'm just standing there. Everybody's in black, and I'm in a plaid suit, you know. looking like a comic Valentine. So Sinatra comes in and signs this contract, which meant he paid no commission, but they represented him. He signed the contract, and he looked at me, and he said, here, is this okay? Well, I mean, you know, the humidity in my drawers soared. I went, I said, yes. Yeah. So he signs the contract, and as he starts to leave, he turns around and looks at me, and he says, I have ties older than this guy. From then on, Sinatra and I had a relationship up until when he died. But, I mean, I did things with him. The secret with Sinatra was making him laugh. And if you can make him laugh, you can break the coil, you know. But he was an experience. You had to stand up to him.
George Schlatter, clearly making people laugh, from Sinatra to the guy at the grocery store, it's in your fiber. It's in who you are. When did you see this? Were you the class clown in kindergarten? Is it in you? Did you see it in your mom and dad, your uncle?
I was 6 years old. And I was in grade school, and they did a production of Jack and the Beanstalk. And I played the giant, which required me to have a chicken and to come down this ladder with the chicken. You know the story of Jack and the Beanstalk?
No, tell me.
Well, it was, you know, the giant stole the chicken. And so anyhow, I came down the ladder with this chicken, and the chicken relieved himself all over my green tunic. And I'm 6 years old, right? My mom is there, and the audience was, all the parents were there, and they were horrified. Here I am covered with chicken guano, right? And I was embarrassed too, but when I heard them laugh at what I looked like, I loved that sound. And I've been covered with chicken droppings ever since.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, that was the first time I heard that laugh. I said, boy, that feels good, you know?
It feels good. It hit you like a tuning fork.
I haven't gotten a laugh that big with my clothes on ever since.
George, I would love to – I'm going to take a break. Can you just hang on? I want to do another segment with you.
Yeah, well, I've got to talk to you. That's the big thing. Forget comedy. I want to talk about surgery.
Okay. It'll be my pleasure. We're talking to the great George Schlatter, one of the funniest men – in front of the camera and behind the camera that I've ever met. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
From now on, I am not Robert Clapper. I want you to call me Smokey.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Smokey Clapper. That's the greatest.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Simon and Garfunkel. That's another great tandem, giving their music tremendous depth, just like a straight man and a comedian. And nobody knows the world of comedy better than my guest, the great George Schlatter. George, all right, it's my turn to go to work. How's your knee doing? It's still early in the game. It's going to take a whole year because of how bad it was. But now it's your turn to ask me some questions.
Well, it was for you to be doing a show about comedy right away is a surprise, you know? Not only are you a surfer, but you are perhaps the most brilliant surgeon and sculptor. The statues you do are just magnificent.
Thank you.
I had trouble with my knee for many, many years, and I didn't want anybody to touch it. Finally, when I saw your sculpture, right, all the stuff you have, I said, well, we'll give this a shot. So I go in. And I am terrified, right? So I meet this charming man with all of the great sculpture, and you perform this thing on my knee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what a trip this was, because first of all, people now, the scar doesn't exist. I think you opened me up for about a foot and a half. And all kinds of stuff in my knee. I can't wait till I try to go through a metal detector. But anyhow, you fixed my knee, and now people come over to the house just to look at the scar. You're magnificent. It's the only body part I'm not ashamed of. But you are magnificent. Now, for you to be doing a comedy show just doesn't make sense to me. But because what you do is not funny. But it is wonderful to hear that you appreciate comedy, you know?
I appreciate really the fact that you have your own operating room, George Schlatter, where you were such an innovator with cameras and camera angles. And to make it onto the screen, the work that's behind it, it's just like looking at that scar on your knee. The work that's behind it, the reason the scar looks so quiet on your knee is because my teacher, Ranawat, who invented the knee replacement at the Hospital for Special Surgery where I trained, they used to say that when he operated, it was as though he was looking at a rose in full bloom, and he would just pull the petals of the rose one at a time off. And that's how he went through the layers, skin, epidermis, dermis, the fascia, the fat, the layers that make up our body, just respecting them as separate layers, like a seven-layer cake. If you do that as a surgeon, then you inflict less trauma on the tissues that have nothing to do with the damage. And they appreciate that. And that's how you bounce back that much quicker from a major operation. So thank you for the kind words.
It doesn't look like you did stitches. It looks like you crocheted it. I mean,
yes. Yes, my mother was a nurse, and that was her hobby. She loved knitting and crocheting, so I probably watched her more than I watched the plastic surgeons who I learned how to sew things up from. I watched my mother doing her knitting and crocheting. You're totally right. Well, can I ask you a question?
My knee gave me trouble for a long time, and I used to look like a Muppet trying to tap dance, but now I can walk pretty good and straight, and I'm very grateful to you.
It's my pleasure, George Slatter, and it's still early in the game. Until it's 365, that 366th day, that's when I want to talk to you, because it takes 9 months to have a baby. Why is that? Why 9 months? That's a long time. Because God didn't ask me. That's why it takes a whole year to get all of that trouble out. Yes, you have new cartilage, a new joint that I resurfaced, but those muscles hated living with that arthritic joint for so many years. That's why it takes a whole year to bring them back to life. And I can't wait to talk to you on the day after it's a year, which will be great.
Well, you're amazing. You really are amazing. But to imagine the fact that you are a joke junkie, right, that appreciates rim shots and then still can come in and crochet a new knee for me, it's amazing.
Well, that's a Renaissance man, and I think on many levels, that's what you are, George Slatter. That's why we get along so well, because you recognize, and what I just learned from you in the first segment talking to you is the straight man has to actually know better. Dan Rowan needed to know better than Dick Martin what was funny and actually had to subjugate his funny to make the other guy look good, but he was actually funnier than Dick Martin, which is amazing.
Many times, and that's our problem with the president. He needs a straight man, you know?
Can I talk to you about, and maybe this is uncomfortable, I don't know.
That.
But what really made, you know, you appreciate the sculptures I make. Well, in my house growing up, there wasn't any money to send Robbie Clapper to art classes. There wasn't any money. So what I did, because I knew I loved art, was my art classes was sitting down with Mad Magazine and a blank piece of paper and trying to copy the drawings of Mort Drucker, who I got to be very good friends with later in life. But he was my art teacher, in essence, growing up. And one of the writers that you picked to be in Laugh-In was the writer for The Odd Father and Jaws and all the classic Mad Magazine stories was Larry Siegel. Tell me a little bit about Larry Siegel and Mad Magazine in your life.
Well, Mad Magazine also had a cartoonist in there that became the most famous cartoonist, Sergio Aragonés.
Yes.
He did all of those drawings.
He lives in Ojai. I've met him.
Well, he's marvelous.
Yeah.
But what? Speak of America. Sorry. So now... Sergio was there, and he was fine. But Larry Siegel, Larry came in. There was a whole group of those people. They were all kind of outcasts. Them were taken from other shows. They were one of them was a professor of political science in Bemidji, Wisconsin. So there was a strange group of people, and Larry Siegel was one of them. So it's fitting that he was writing for Mad Magazine, which was a real trip, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always. It sounds serious. It sounds crazy. There's always a serious side to comedy. You know, and if you can find that button, then you can make it. We're going to do, I love Laugh-In, but we're going to do a new show now that will cause more trouble after I get through adding a laugh track to Trump, right? And rim shots and music and everything. We're going to do a show called Speak Up America. I did a show 40 years ago called Speak Up America, where we took important issues like gun control and abortion and marriage in the church. And then we had people debate both sides. We're going to do it called Speak Up America, and that should get me in trouble. We did 9 shows, and then the NBC News department made them cancel it because we were too controversial, and we were dealing with important subjects, so they made us cancel it. And now, you know, thank God they're canceled. So what are you going to do?
So, George, you very happily live in the world of creativity, but also the world of business. You very few people have that capability. This is why artists get taken advantage of in life, because they just want to be artists and people take advantage of that. But nobody ever took advantage of George Schlatter. What was the secret of being a businessman as well as being able to make a living in a creative world?
A lack of fear. What happened is we would go in and I was not afraid to get fired. And I think I was fired more than any producer in television. And I'm going to get fired again when we do Speak Up America.
Mm-hmm.
Laugh-In was an accident. They didn't mean to buy it. It was done the day after the Miss America contest, and they didn't have anything else to put on in there. So they bought Laugh-In as an accident. And we went in, and they didn't like it because they said it didn't make sense. It was too fast. So I said, I'll recut it. I tightened it down some more, and we walked in with a show that was really revolutionary when you think about how long
mm-hmm.
it was, and the fast cuts and the fact we did editing that wasn't even possible then. But that was it. It was an adventure, an ability, and an obsession with swimming upstream, and that's what mm-hmm. was Laughing, and that's what made it work. And Goldie Hawn was a dancer. She wasn't a comedian, and she came in, and, I mean, she was just so adorable and so charming. She wasn't a comic, so we didn't know what to do with it. So we gave her an introduction of Dan Rowan, and she screwed it up so bad. And it was, and she said, "Oh, I'll do it again." I said, "Don't you touch that woman. You leave it. Don't ever touch that woman again."
And wow.
So from then on, she never got a chance to look at the cue cards. She never got a chance to rehearse, and everything. We just made her make those mistakes.
Did you have a mentor, George Schlatter, or was it just you making it up as you went along and trusted that if it made you laugh, it was funny to everyone else?
We did. We had a script. We would shoot the script, and then we would go play. And we did win. You realize that Lily Tomlin is one of the greatest improvisational comedians that we ever had. And she would come in with these wild characters. And we would put them on. And if it worked, we'd use it. And if it didn't work, we wouldn't use it. But it usually worked. Ruth Buzzi was another one. And she came in with these crazy, crazy characters. She auditioned in the Xerox room on a tin piano, singing her own composition of Don't Futz Around. Now, when that, you breed a superstar, you know. And
but you trusted
Joanne Worley been sounding like an air raid warning. And Artie Johnson was selling suits at Carol's. And he came to my house, and he was the Easter Nazi. He laid Easter eggs all over our front lawn. Now, this sounds weird, but it was weird. But at that point, they were ready for something different. NBC was dying, and so we came in with all of these wonderful, wonderful Lily, Goldie, Joanne, you know, Artie. And we played. We would tape until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then we would do the joke wall last, you know, with all of those people behind the wall. What went on behind that wall should never be reported. But it was,
so George,
it was an accident. We should never eliminate accident from our lives. You shouldn't. But you leave. You keep accident out of your line of work. But it works for me.
I love it. I have to ask you one last question.
Did I ever thank you for the job you did on my knee?
You did. Thank you. George, I have one last question.
All right. Wait a minute. Okay.
Is it that you felt confident in what you thought was funny would be funny for everyone else?
Yeah.
That's where it came from?
Yeah. I mean, my wife, Jolene, understand, was the girl on the Kovacs show. So she was a real appreciation of comedy. My daughter, Maria, wound up editing it. And what we would do is, there were no rules. We were constantly hit with, you can't say that, you can't do that, you shouldn't do this. And we would do it anyhow and then deliver it and take a chance. And so when NBC looked at it, they didn't even like the show. They didn't want to air it. Because
wow.
It was fast and whatever. So, and that's what made it work. And so I've been living off of my mistakes ever since. But I
George, I want to thank you for waking up early to be with us.
Well,
of all the guests I've interviewed over 10 years, you make me smile the most. I want to thank you so much for being there.
Listen, doctor, thank you for my knee. I now don't walk like a comic Valentine. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks again, George. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris, for making it happen. All right, Warriors, coming up next, the clinic will be open. We'll have a few minutes. The number is 877 710 ESPN, and I want to tell a story about going to visit a prosthetics shop in Ventura. I'll explain. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
Magandang umaga.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Cells are just tiny people.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. This song right here, Michelle Branch and Carlos Santana, is the song I'm bringing with me if I'm deserted on an island in the middle of nowhere. And it's a tandem. It's Carlos Santana. He's the straight man. He's playing that guitar. He's the touchstone, allowing this flowery, fragrant essence of Michelle Branch's voice to color in the black and white drawing. It's a perfect song, in my opinion, The Game of Love. Next week, I cannot wait. My guest, I love talking about and talking to doctors, but he's actually my doctor. He's a colon and rectal specialist, Tom Sokol, because I want to talk to him about hemorrhoids. Yep, they're funny. Not until you have them. And I got a great clapper vision for hemorrhoids. You ready? If your colon is the 405 freeway, the main thoroughfare, the end of your intestines, your colon, your rectum. If there's too much traffic on the 405, thanks to apps like Waze, you get off the freeway and you go up the service road. And that is Sepulveda. In my opinion, the 405 freeway is your colon, and the veins along that parallel the 405 freeway, just like Sepulveda parallels the 405 freeway, are the veins that parallel the colon. And a hemorrhoid is when you get off to get on Sepulveda because there's too much traffic on the 405, and you actually find there's even more traffic on Sepulveda because of the lights. That's a hemorrhoid. Every one of those stoplights on the Sepulveda road that parallels the 405, every one of those traffic lights is a hemorrhoid. Can you imagine what next week's going to be like talking to Dr. Tom Sokol about hemorrhoids? He doesn't know what's waiting for him. Me with some clapper vision about hemorrhoids. This week, I told you, I took the week off and I got to surf. In the beginning of the week, because of the intense heat and the moisture of the ocean, and I'm not a meteorologist, but the fog that was there at 5:30 in the morning before the sun came up, and I'm already in the ocean, was so intense, I did not know what was front, back, where the shoreline was. I didn't know up or down. I knew down because I was sitting on my surfboard. But that's it. And it made me think about what I was taught. Robbie, if you're ever in an avalanche, not like I'm ever going to be one, but if it ever happened to me, I was taught that if you're a mountain climber or a skier, and all of a sudden the top of the mountain decides to shift and the snow comes piling down and you get caught in that avalanche and you're buried under snow, it's so disorienting that you start digging. But many times the mountain climber digs in the wrong direction and digs deeper because they're disoriented. This is what happened to JFK Jr. in his plane crash. He thought he was going out of the downturn of his plane because he couldn't read instruments apparently. So he was going by his feel. And as he's trying to accelerate from crashing to Earth, he thought he's accelerating away from the Earth, but in fact, the opposite was the case. He was accelerating towards the Earth, and that was his plane crash. That's what disorientation means. So the tip I was told is, Robbie, if you're ever in an avalanche and you're disoriented and you're upside down and backwards and you don't know where you are, and I thought about this while I was sitting on my surfboard this week in the thickest fog I'd ever been in, I was told, just drool out of your mouth. Make some saliva and let it drip out of your mouth. You'll feel the saliva either going towards your nose or towards your chin. That'll tell you which way is down. And so I thought about that this week. If the fog got too great and I couldn't even figure out which direction I was in, I thought maybe if I start to drool, I'll know which direction it is. Fortunately, I didn't need to do that, and I had the greatest morning surfing, even though it was dense fog. And I had a beautiful experience this week in Ventura because I visited one of the guys I surf with. He makes braces for people with polio, people who've had their leg amputated, John McAtee. His place is called Channel Islands Prosthetics and Orthotics. He's going to be a guest on the show in a few weeks because I want to talk about something called the cheetah, which is a new way to make a brace for someone with an amputation so that they could still run in a marathon. Can you imagine? So I went to visit the shop one of these days this past week. I think it was Thursday. And when I went into the shop, there are 10 different people, and I was wearing a mask, 10 different people at different workbenches working on different braces for different patients. But up on the wall was a speaker. You know what they were playing? All day long as these men work, they're listening to ESPN. So when I walked into the shop, all of them came up to me to tell me how much they love the Weekend Warrior Show and how they love Mason and Ireland. It gives me great pride to know that people who work hard, like I do, and enjoy doing, and my father did, they listen to the radio like my dad did, and they appreciate each and every week what I do here, just like you do. So I can't thank you enough for telling all your friends and your family, because it's been a long time now, 10 years. And thanks to Cedars-Sinai and Brian Croft and Gordon Kolodny, we're going to keep doing it. So until next week, I'll see you on the radio. In the meantime, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. Make sure you do that this week. Have a good week. Oh.